Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in. Welcome to episode 3 of Voices of Divine Wisdom. I'm Suzanne Call, a member of the Board of Trustees at Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy. My journey with the board began 16 years ago, and I am honored to continue serving today. Did you know Divine Wisdom was one of 6 original schools selected to move from a parish-led model to being governed by a board of trustees, becoming one of the diocese's first academies in 2009. Last week, we heard from parents about their child's experience with our enrichment programs. This week, we will hear from our enrichment teachers. At Divine Wisdom, learning goes beyond the traditional curriculum with weekly enrichment programs in art, music, Spanish, STEM, technology, and health and wellness. Each program follows a structured curriculum designed with a clear purpose, helping students think critically, explore creatively, and develop real-world skills. These enrichment opportunities don't replace classroom instruction. Rather, they enrich it, making learning more engaging, well-rounded, and meaningful. Listen in as our teachers share their experiences, insights, and the exciting ways our enrichment programs are shaping the future of our students.
Welcome to Voices of Divine Wisdom. Thank you so much for joining me. Please tell me your name and your position in the school.
My name is Frank Signorello. I am the STEM program director, and I've been here for 10 years.
10 years. So have you been the STEM program director that long, or when did that start?
Yeah, I've been the STEM program director in the 2 schools that we had originally.
Gotcha.
And the one in Bayside, we had a nice space also. And then with this new space, I took over and really helped to develop the programs and the space itself.
So you started when the Bayside campus was open?
Yes, we started with the Bayside campus.
I got to tell you, we've gotten a lot of compliments from people we've talked to on the show about that STEM lab. It's a remarkable thing to see, and it's very easy to be complimentary because every time I walk by, I always see you doing something new, interesting. You got roadways and robots and all sorts of fun experiments going on.
The room itself is really impressive.
It is.
And that was Vinny Peluso and his team.
Oh, cool.
Really worked well with us to decide how to lay out the space and to make it look, that industrial look is what people are attracted to.
Sure, for sure. But you really bring a lot of joy to the classroom, it looks like, every time.
Thank
you. That's very cool.
Programmatic parts are fun.
I want to talk about the program a little bit. You teach every grade, that's correct?
K-8.
What is the biggest difference between teaching, generally speaking, the younger students versus the older students?
Early childhood requires more skill building, those soft and the hard skills, being able to get them to use their hands in a productive way, to work on projects that have an end,
sure,
that they see the end in mind. It's not just play. It involves all 3 aspects of the design cycle. So they're designing, they're building, and then they get to play.
Oh, wow.
And in that process, they really take ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to build those skills with K-3.
Yeah.
The upper grades, they have those skills, the soft and the hard skills, you know, spatial reasoning, being able to cut and saw and file and, you know, do those kind of building techniques that only the big kids can do.
Mm-hmm.
But when they see it as play, they take it to the next level. So I have to guide them.
Right.
Less so with the little kids, more so with the big kids, the 4th through 8th grade, because they really need to see or build that bridge to their curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
K-3 is really like playtime, and 4 through 8 is curriculum-based.
And that's interesting because the art teacher, Daniela Filiberti, actually told us very similar about building those skills and working towards an end goal. So it's actually a very interesting similarity there. What are some of the projects you've done in the lab that students seem to have really responded to the most?
Within the curriculum itself, just doing wet labs, just being able to do the chemistry or the biology has become really important because then they understand how science is done.
Mm-hmm.
that it's not this pie in the sky, you know, ivory tower type of thing, that they're doing science every day and they're able now to do these really high impact exercises that they would find in a college lab, let's say, a little toned down, of course.
Sure.
But they're doing it for real. They're doing science for real, which they don't get from a textbook. You right. see it, but you don't, until you put your hands on and you get a little dirty.
Get experience in it.
Exactly. That experiential learning goes a long way to making the connection back to the curriculum. Always back to the curriculum.
Gotcha. Sort of, I think, in the same vein, there's a lot of talk, obviously, about the advances in technology, just in society and in general. What do you see as the most important takeaways for the students who might be interested in a field in science or technology, or even if not interested, what could they still take away?
I think 21st century skills will involve being able to visualize data, to take the copious amounts of data that they're getting from the internet or from even just gathering their own data using, you know, tools, technology, being able to visualize that and use it to make conjectures or to make claims, mm-hmm. using that evidence and making sense of this huge amount of data that they're going to be bombarded with is going to play a big role. So data visualization, that's going to play a big role in their lives.
That's a great answer. That's so interesting. Really understanding things from a macro level, so to speak, when there's so much little information to see, it's very hard. Can you give me an example of how you might encourage that kind of thinking?
With the eighth grade, we get, when we study weather, we get bombarded with a ton of weather data. Humidity, temperature, pressure, wind direction, wind velocity, all of that data over multiple days, months, so on. Once they aggregate all that data and they can visualize, either create a pie chart or make something concrete out of that data, and then try and understand that stuff. And then from that, they would make predictions like a weather person.
For right? sure.
That's just one piece. When we do robots, let's say, and they look at the lay of the land like their play field, and they have to figure out, well, this goes in this direction and we have to go north, south, east, west. That's a lot of data. And then they have to include that data into their coding and they have to visualize. They have to take themselves out of their own little body and put themselves into the robot. And say, where do I go with this data? How do I take this code and really visualize what that robot's going to do spatially?
Right.
And that's hard to do.
Yeah, that
right?
sounds...
To see out of yourself. And that's one of the things they're going to have to learn, how data helps them to make decisions, whether it's coding or weather forecasting or beach erosion, things like that.
And it really gets nitty gritty because
oh my goodness.
Every piece of information is important. You have to describe every action for a robot to understand it that we take for granted.
Right. So the whole peanut butter and jelly sandwich making thing that we do. You know, what are the steps in making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And they think it's only like seven steps, seven lines of code, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, it's like 250 lines of code that you have to write to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So think of it like that. And when you're gathering that data or when you're trying to interpret or visualize that data, what does it mean?
I love that. That's so interesting. Before we let you go here, while we have you and while we have the ears of our listeners, I wondered if there's anything that you would like to share about yourself that people might not know. A fun fact, maybe.
So you know how Miss Frizzle, I don't know, her tagline with Miss Frizzle. You remember Miss Frizzle?
I don't know her tagline offhand, but.
Her tagline is, don't be afraid to take chances, get messy and make mistakes.
Great.
I live by that. I do that with my own kids. I do that with the kids here. And even in my own life, funny thing is I make ice cream. I love making ice cream. I try new flavors and sometimes they're disgusting.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you put bacon and oregano together in cream, what does that taste like? So good. It's actually not good.
Turns out.
But beer and bacon actually works in ice cream.
Taking notes.
Yeah. I'm a certified ice cream maker. I live by that motto. I take chances, get messy, make mistakes. I don't always eat the ice cream that I make, but I try and live by that motto.
Also, that's a great answer. That's my favorite answer. Well, Frank, thank you so much for joining us. That was great.
Thank you.
Loved having you. So I never did Nisma growing up. I didn't start music until I was in high school, and even midway through high school. So how do you interact with the Nisma program?
So for anyone who doesn't know, Nisma stands for, it's an acronym.
We're not recording, by the way. We're just testing levels. Okay. Are you ready?
Hi, my name is Mr. Anthony Russo, and I am Divine Wisdom's music teacher for grades nursery to grade 8.
Very cool. And this is exciting because you and I actually spent 4 years together in high school.
Yes, both Alex and I went to Cathedral together. And under fun facts, I actually was going to mention, I have an early musical memory of us doing Jingle Bell Rock together.
Oh, my God.
You were in the chorus,
yes.
And I was playing the drum set.
Absolutely.
And it went pretty well, I thought.
Yeah. We had a small list of songs playing in their auditorium or whatever.
Yeah, it was Christmas time.
Oh, that's so funny. Yes. Oh, good times. Oh, yeah. I love catching up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's circle back. We'll catch up more later. Let's circle back to Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy. For me, this is my... St. Anastasia's was my alma mater, the St. Anastasia School. How did you end up at Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy?
This is my 13th year, actually. Mm. Yeah, I started in 2012.
Wow.
And I knew the assistant principal at the time.
Okay.
And the school was growing. So in 2012, I was 2 days a week. And then after that, I was 4 days a week. And then by 2014, I was full time. The school kept growing each year.
Yeah. It's so encouraging to see, especially as a music teacher, to see your program growing instead of the alternative that can happen so often elsewhere. So you've been teaching here for 12 years. Tell us about your music classes. You teach kindergarten through 8th grade.
Nursery through grade 8.
Through 8th grade. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit just about the nursery and the young children. What's that interaction like with them and music? How do you incorporate that into a lesson?
Mm-hmm. I would say they're kind of getting their feet wet with performing music with others.
Okay.
Like that's sitting in a circle, singing with the piano, holding handheld percussion instruments while they play and sing.
Yeah.
Things like that. It's the season for hot cross buns with Easter coming.
Sure.
So they were playing rhythm sticks and singing hot cross buns at the same time, things like that.
At the same time is actually pretty impressive. That's pretty good.
The coordination is what we're introducing them to.
And what are you doing at the higher grades?
Yeah, a big part of it is we do what I call event teaching, meaning there's an event coming and we're preparing for an event.
Right.
When we're not doing that, each grade has their own specific thing. Grades 1 and 2, I try to get a lot of the music reading done, teaching them how to read music.
Cool.
Because the plan is that if they join band in 3rd grade, then they already know how to read music.
Right.
Which brings me to my next thing. In 3rd grade, we use these xylophones, the blue cases. You've probably seen them around the building.
Sure.
It's our version of the recorder. Did you have a recorder when you were growing up here?
You know, I missed out on the recorder, but I'm familiar with this as a common experience in a lot of people's younger music classes.
The principal at the time and me, the recorder, it's very high pitched.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't sound good easily. And not to gross anyone out, but there's saliva involved.
Yeah,
and
people formed a lot of bad associations.
With the xylophone that we have, for each kid, you pick up a mallet and presto, you play a bar and it's a nice sound.
Yeah.
And the xylophone is a piano and a drum combined.
Right.
So there's kids, Miss Rocia's daughter, we were playing Lean on Me on xylophone when she was here, and she put it together that the xylophone is just a piano that you hit.
Yeah.
And she went to her keyboard at home and was able to play it.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm sold. Just knowing that we have xylophones instead of recorders, that sounds genius.
Yeah.
Especially because, like you said, the percussion plus the piano.
Yeah.
I mean, really good fundamental for music learning. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
What about culturally in the classroom are you able to teach students as far as music history or even modern music? How do you incorporate that into different grades?
6th grade, I would say, gets the most of that because they're at an age where I feel they really enjoy it.
Okay.
So 6th grade does a course, The History of Rock, and it's not presented in a dry way. It's done in a fun way.
Nice.
They start in the 50s at Chuck Berry. They listen to songs like Johnny B. Goode, and we grow up chronologically. After Chuck Berry, we go to Elvis, the King of Rock.
Of course.
Then we learn about doo-wop and harmony, because after we're learning the Beatles, so you need to understand harmony before you can understand the Beatles, and we work our way all the way up. And then just because you mentioned culture, like this month for Black History Month, I did a Louis Armstrong lesson with a lot of the younger grades, and they enjoyed it. And then I heard from siblings that their sister was playing What a Wonderful World all week on YouTube. And it's a fun way to expose them to music that they might not otherwise ever find themselves listening to.
Yeah, that's so great. What do you think are the skills that the students are gaining from music class that are really transferable to either other classrooms and expertise or even just uses at home?
I would say it's the goals of the events, especially with the Christmas show. I copied the way I teach it from when I student taught in a school on Long Island, where if you have this big event in December, each week you do a little bit, and each week it gets better and better, and it culminates in this big in this big event. So the idea is the students learn if they have a big project, you don't wait till the night before. You do it a little bit each day and it gets better as you go.
Yeah, I've actually heard a lot about this goal-oriented learning process from a lot of the teachers. It makes a lot of sense because it's very motivating to build towards something and learning all the little skills along the way. I think that's really good. So the concerts that we have here, actually, I kind of just want you to give me a quick rundown of what all the concerts are, all the public performances that they are building towards, and a little bit about them.
Yeah, I would say there's three main things. The concerts that I run is the Christmas show, which features grades K to 8, that takes place at St. Francis Prep.
People love the Christmas show.
Every class does a song, and then it culminates with a big finale at the end. Our little school tradition is we do Hark as the first finale every year, because, you know, that's the main reason for Christmas. And then we do a different song after. One year we did Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time, and that went really well. And then in addition to that, if you're a member of the band program, which is grades 3 and above, or grades 1 and 2 have ukulele, where they learn to play chords and sing, they have a winter and spring concert as well. And I forgot to mention, I have my Flag Day concert in June where they sing the patriotic songs. And then this one gets forgotten sometimes. There's a drama program, which is basically musical theater.
Sure.
And every year they put on a kid's version of a musical.
Oh,
like last year they did Godspell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my performances are Christmas, Flag Day. The band has winter and spring, and drama has a concert every March or so.
That's awesome. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier that you interact with the NISMA program.
Yes.
Which is a New York specific program. I didn't grow up with NISMA, but when I was in music school, everyone around me did. So educate me.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, NISMA stands for the New York State School Music Association. And what it gives is students who take piano lessons, it gives them a chance. They prepare a piece for sometimes as long as half a year, like difficult pieces.
Yeah.
And they work on it each week, and then they get to play it for a judge. Our NISMA is in June at Queens. Queens College is the piano festival, actually.
My other alma mater.
Yeah, so they perform a piece for a judge, and they get feedback. And the good thing about it is they have a goal, and they know they have to practice every week. They can't wait until the night before for NISMA.
No, for sure.
And we give out medals to the students who do well, so that's good motivation.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough deal breaking through that glass ceiling. A lot of people have talked about working towards that, and it's built a lot of musicians over the years, for sure.
Yeah, there's 6 levels, level 1 to 6. So we have about 15 students that go every year. Some are level 1, and then some have been going for years, and they're up to level 5 and 6 now.
That's great.
Yeah.
Tell me about a memory you have, like a specific success story, if any, from your over a decade now in Divine Wisdom. What's a particular story that's really stood out to you?
Well, one thing I mentioned is I love the finales at the Christmas show because it's the whole school coming together, and we do a little bit each week. Like, we memorize 2 lines a week for 10 minutes a week, and then it really pays off at the end.
Right.
But then, if I may, a student actually sent me a letter once. It's a small little paragraph. Can I read it?
Oh, yeah. You have the physical letter here, please.
Yeah, yeah. This student actually mailed it with a stamp.
Wow.
Like it wasn't an
email. Like an old man.
Yeah. Well, it was a girl, but yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, pardon me while I read this. I just think it's a good answer to your question. She said, Dear Mr. Russo, thank you for everything. Since first grade, I was so excited to come to your classes. I mean, I just love music so much and still do, but I did take a lot away from your classes. One, the Beatles and many other music legends. Two, piano and how to begin playing it. And three, friendships. I feel like I have made so many friends where the conversations we first had started off with, what music do you like? And most of it was music you introduced to me. So thank you for that and everything else. And that was
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and that came around Thanksgiving time, which was a nice time for it to come, you know?
Of course.
That was a busy season.
How long ago is this?
November of this 2024.
Oh, of this of this past year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think she's a third year in high school now.
Oh, that's got to feel great.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's such a great capstone on this conversation, but I don't want to let you go too quickly. I just want to leave off with, how can the parents continue supporting and encouraging music growth outside of the class?
If your child really loves music, private teacher is a great way to get better. Mm-hmm. And reminding them and finding ways to motivate them to practice. Yeah. I always use the sports analogy, like the CYO basketball. They'll do that 3, 4, 5 nights a week.
Yeah.
So if you want to get great at music, you have to practice just like that.
The same thing.
Yeah, and YouTube is not just for silly videos anymore. Right. It's a really helpful resource.
Yeah.
If a student is playing trumpet, and even if they don't have a teacher, they could type in how to play When the Saints Go Marching In, and there's now quality instruction up there.
Yeah.
A decade ago, maybe not as much, but now there really is.
Yeah, and there's, even for me, it's a resource where I have to sing something and there's music with the sheet music playing along.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
When I learn a song now, I don't type in sheet music on Google anymore. I go straight to YouTube as my first reference.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And I think that is a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, before we let you go, while we still have you here, I mean, we talked a little bit about some fun facts about us, but is there anything else that you might want to share with the listeners while we have you here?
Well, I think we have one for both of us. I would say my main instrument that when I play shows with adults, I'm a drum set player.
Yeah.
Like a lot of rock songs with that. And I believe you are, would you say, primarily an opera vocalist, or is that a bad phrasing?
No. I think that's correct. If you want to be hoity-toity, you could call it a bel canto style singer, but I'm an operatic baritone for sure.
Yeah,
which is quite a contrast between the two of us. But
yeah, maybe we could do Bohemian Rhapsody.
I don't want to take that on just yet, but
yeah.
Anyway, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. This is really great catching up.
My name is Diana Flores.
Diana, and you are the
Spanish teacher.
Right. And how long have you had that role at Divine Wisdom?
This will be my second year here. So it will be my second academic year teaching at Divine Wisdom.
Cool. Did you teach elsewhere before Divine Wisdom?
Yes. I teach in different colleges.
I teach
at St. John's University, Hofstra University, Nassau Community College, and St. Vincent College too.
That's very cool. Tony and I are actually Hofstra alums, so we're very familiar.
Oh, nice. Nice to know.
So now that you're at Divine Wisdom, tell me a little bit about what's differentiated Divine Wisdom with your experiences teaching at other schools.
Definitely is because I'm working with children now. Before, I work with adults. And the energy is different. Working with children is more joy, more passion. You're required to have more energy.
Sure.
And it brings more happiness to me working with children than working with adults is a different structure.
Very cool.
Yes.
Out of curiosity, what's your degree in? Is your study education or foreign language specific?
I study foreign languages specific.
Gotcha.
Language and literature. I actually have two masters. One is language and literature, and my second master is international communications.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yes. What's the difference between those two?
It's a lot of difference. With language and literature, it's about language and culture.
Okay.
But international communication, I have multi-sector. I can work in politics, government, and different countries.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. Have you been able to utilize that in any jobs you've had in the past? Or
actually, right now, I work with an adult community in St. John's University. That's my second job. And I work with adult community, which I help them with ESL classes in the evening.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Oh, that sounds really great. I want to talk about, now that you're teaching younger children, what do you think is the benefit of teaching Spanish at an early age? Because you teach every grade level here, is that right?
Correct. I teach every grade level here at Divine Wisdom. And to answer your question, I think for a student at young age, learning a new language is important because it helps them solving problem-solving skills. Mm-hmm. It helps them with memory, listening, and comprehension skills. I think language at early age enhances student communication, problem solving, and memory. I believe it's really important at young age to start learning another language. And that's the perfect time.
Yeah, and because it's true, it's harder to learn a language as you get older.
Correct. And I can even see that with my adult students, that it's harder for them than for the children to learn another language.
Is there any sort of teaching method that you utilize? Do you have like songs or activities that you use in the classroom?
I will say I use all of them. Okay. And I see that most of them for the younger age, they enjoy when I read stories for them. I like to use the demonstrative show the students with stories, with song, games. They love to play games, especially fifth grade, sixth grade. They love games. But I try to incorporate all the method as I see what worked best for each grade.
Tell me a little bit about the culture that you're able to teach. Do you prioritize culture in certain grades? And what does that look like?
Correct. I introduce culture from sixth to eighth grade. And it looked different because we look the background of history. We look about the connection between the language, the connection between culture, tradition, and at the same time, they love food. Mm-hmm. When we talk about other countries, and I notice how they enjoy to do projects based on countries. And when we talk about food, it brings to them the connection to learn more about a different country.
Yeah, it's really motivational if you put it in that context. What would you tell the students, especially the eighth graders that are about to go into high school? Do you have any kind of advice or anything you would say to them to kind of keep that learning process going?
This is a message for eighth grade. I will say for seventh grade too, that is moving up to eighth grade, is that they don't only going to see it in high school. They will see it in college, but all their life, they're going to see how important it was when Señora Flores asked them to pay attention when we're going over grammar, listening, speaking. They will see that in a real life world, they're going to see how important it was to learn another language.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that the parents can do to support learning at home?
Yes, I think parents is the main factor, not only for learning a new language, but in all area of learning. I think the parents need to be more involved. I am here for any question they have, but also to follow up with any assignment they work in class, helping them, asking questions, what subject you guys are learning right now? Do you need help? Looking on the Google Classroom to see if there's any assignment, any video, or extra help. I think that will help them to improve in not only in Spanish, but in all the area and subject in school. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, speaking of asking the teacher a question, I wonder if you could just leave us with something while we have you here and we have the attention of all of our listeners. What might be something people don't know about you? A fun fact.
Well, maybe some of you will not know that I have an energetic 4 years old boy.
Oh, yeah.
I am a mom besides being a teacher, and he's my everything. So this is something maybe you guys don't know, that I have a 4 years old boy that is super energetic. But I also want to say, like, I love arts.
Oh, cool.
That's one thing I incorporate. You will see that in my class as student, I also do an art because I love art and dance. I'm a lot of things.
Wow. I mean, between an evening job and a four-year-old boy, you're keeping busy. That's for sure.
Yes.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Well, Diana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and it was a pleasure being here.
It was our pleasure. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Linda Keppel. I'm the Associate Principal at Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy. Today, we had the privilege of hearing from our dedicated teachers, whose expertise and commitment bring our enrichment programs to life. These programs don't just complement our curriculum, they transform it, making learning engaging, innovative, and well-rounded. A heartfelt thank you to our faculty for fostering creativity, curiosity and growth in every student. Their dedication ensures our enrichment programs continue to thrive and inspire. We can't wait for you to tune in next time, where there's always more to explore. You can follow us on Facebook at Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy and Instagram at Discover Divine Wisdom to experience the incredible work of our students and teachers. You can follow Voices of Divine Wisdom on Overcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your podcast player of choice. Thoughts, feedback, email the show at podcast@dwcaonline.org. To learn more about our school and apply, go to dwcaonline.org.
Suzanne Carl is our executive producer. Recording, editing, mixing, and mastering by Tony DiToronto. Bob Sherling is the chairperson at Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy. Miriam Benici is the principal. Music by Maria Caputo. Logo created by Queen Snowpea. Special thanks this week to Daniela Filiberti, Diana Flores, Laura DiMarcello, Anthony Russo, Frank Signorello, and I'm your host, Alex Sherling. Voices of Divine Wisdom podcast is recorded at Divine Wisdom Catholic Academy in beautiful Queens, New York. This has been a Pixel Noise podcast. To learn more, go to pixelnoise.tech. That's pixelnoise.tech.